You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, Heat Nation, and welcome to your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the only podcast that breaks down every game, news item, rumor, and more. Thank you for subscribing on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or in Himalaya. My name is David Rommel. The Heat down 4 with under a minute left in their matchup against the Atlanta Hawks. Atlanta's Trae Young found Alex Len under the basket with a nice pass to push their lead to 6 over the Heat. He then walked along the baseline, staring directly into the AAA crowd, waving his arms across his chest while yelling, "It's over." Well, not quite, Trae. A Duncan Robinson 3 cut the lead in half, then a Jimmy Butler 3 tied it up. The Heat played some really excellent defense on Young, in particular during that last minute, and with just under 5 seconds left, Butler had a chance to close it out for Miami, but a 17-footer from the top of the key rimmed out, and the Heat would go into their second straight overtime game. The Heat absolutely dominated that extra period, going on a 9-0 run to start off and finishing overtime with an 18-4 advantage, and what turned out to be a pretty lopsided win, 135-121 for Miami. Incredible performances, a really fun game. It looked like it was going to be a struggle for most of the game because Miami started off very well. They blew up eventually was a 15-point lead, and then Atlanta slowly but surely chipped away at it, and they kept coming back with some long-range shooting. They got some scoring performances from rookie DeAndre Hunter, also Jabari Parker. They put up some big points too. Trae Young chipped in a little bit, although he was a little bit more inefficient, something I'll get into a little bit later on. But they just kept chipping away. Cam Reddish, even the rookie, another one of their rookies, was able to knock down some long-range shots, and it just seemed like somebody was always stepping up at just the wrong minute for Miami, and being able to step up and put Atlanta over the Heat. Unfortunately for Atlanta, it just didn't seem to stick around into the extra period, and Miami was able to finish with an overtime win. But incredible individual performances I was getting to before, historically great ones. Kendrick Nunn led all scorers with 36 points. Duncan Robinson added 34. And Bam Adebayo putting up 30. Not just did he put up 30 points, but he also notched his first career triple-double. He had 30 points along with 11 rebounds, 11 assists. And Jimmy Butler also finished with 20 points, 18 rebounds, and 10 assists. So two teammates finishing with triple-doubles, a first in Heat history. Incredible. It's just a fantastic experience to see these players put up such great individual numbers, for them to be able to do it on the same night. It really seems like if the talk about Miami, especially during the offseason after Jimmy Butler chose to sign with the Heat, was about whether or not the Heat needed a second All-Star, ladies and gentlemen, I think they've got a second All-Star. I think Bam Adebayo has a pretty strong case this year. I mean, you look at the different front court players that are going to be competing against Bam for a spot. And sure, Adetokounmpo, Joel Embiid, Pascal Siakam, they're probably shoo-ins to start over Bam. That's fine. But as a substitute, as an alternate, a backup, that's fine. He should be an all-star game reserve without a doubt at this point, just because he continues to get better and better. He's still so young, still showing such incredible versatility. A triple-double for a big man like that. I mean, and to do so with such authority. He's playing fantastic as an individual and incredible as a team player as well, doing so much for his teammates and for Miami's success. Miami improves to 4-0 in overtime games this season while also going 11-0 at home. They improved their record to 18-6 overall, third best in the Eastern Conference. So I was thinking about this before because obviously Miami did struggle for most of the game, particularly during their last three periods. And then, there's a way of looking at this. I started feeling, as I was watching this game and going, why is DeAndre Hunter blowing up the Heat? He's been so inconsistent this year. He scored a career high, if I'm not mistaken. And Cam Reddish and Jabari Parker and all these guys that maybe have struggled shooting throughout their careers. Why are they putting up such big numbers against the Heat? And I was thinking maybe it's just because Miami's not particularly good. Maybe they're getting a little sloppy. Maybe they're just not playing to the level that they should. But then you come back and watch this fourth quarter, especially that last minute of the fourth quarter, and then the overtime period where they look so engaged and so dominant. And you start to wonder, well, maybe they are really good. And maybe it's a 48-minute game. And with a three-point shot, and especially with a team like Atlanta that can catch fire pretty quickly. A team can come back against any team, really. And anybody, no lead is unsurmountable. And so I was thinking, was it a good win, a bad win? And I have to come to the conclusion that it's a pretty good win. Not only is it a hell of a fun win, and it really absolutely was, but it's also a very good win because they were able to put away a team that, you know, is under 500. I know I had talked about it in my preview in the previous game, in the previous episode, rather, that Trae Young was upset with Atlanta's direction, with their record this year, and obviously with the loss of John Collins for a 25-game suspension. You know, they haven't won a lot of games. They've been struggling with that. But that kind of talk, especially when it gets public, does seem to light a fire under teammates, especially if Young is respected around the locker room, and I think he is. And so I was concerned that maybe the rest of the roster would take that a little personally and try to show up Miami, and it certainly looked like they did. Not only that, but the Hawks front office has also promised Young that more help is coming, whatever that might mean. And so maybe for a lot of those players on that roster, it was an opportunity for them to kind of show what they have so that maybe they won't get traded or things of that sort. But either way, they look particularly good, and Miami responded. And that's all that matters. That really is all that matters about tonight's game. It was a fun one. It was exciting. They had some great individual performances. Like I said, Kendrick Nunn was 36, Duncan Robinson with 34, looking like an elite shooter, something that we should probably talk about more around the league. But anyway, coming up next, I'll talk about a little bit more from some individual performances and what the victory means for Miami. You're listening to Locked On Heat. I'll get into the player and stat of the game in the next segment. Let's talk a little bit more about tonight's game. Some more individual performances, particularly one that's probably going to go a little bit below the radar here is Derrick Jones Jr. He played some excellent defense, and that's something that, I mean, I think you could probably see if you watched the game. You probably notice a lot of what he was doing there, particularly on Trae Young. Derrick played 35 minutes, and he only scored 9 points. He took 4 of 9 shots. 0-for-4 from three-point range, so that long-range shot was not falling. He also had 7 rebounds, 2 assists, a steal, and a block. Very clean game for him, but it was his defense, particularly on Trae Young, that made the most difference. Young finished 7 of 19, not bad overall, but 3 of 11 from three-point range. That's under 30%. And so he also, this is a guy who can shoot from 29 feet even as much as 30, 33 feet. We've seen him knock down these shots over the last couple of seasons. He can make those shots pretty regularly. He did have a long-range mob there. But Derrick Jones, once he got the defensive assignment and shifted on to Trae Young, made things so difficult for him. Part of Young's efficiency is, or his impact, rather, because he does tend to be a little bit inefficient with his shooting, is his ability to, again, space the floor. But then once he sees an initial defender break away, or if he's able to drive past that initial defender, he can find cutters at the rim, or he can kick it out to somebody along the perimeter. But he couldn't find that kind of space with Derrick Jones all over him. And it's just that kind of length. I still have questions about Derrick's individual defense at times. I'm not sure exactly how it plays out. But this is an ideal situation for him because Trae Young is somewhat undersized, only about 6'1", maybe a 175 pounds soaking wet. And Derrick was just, he has the right combination of length, speed, strength to make things difficult for a guy like Trae Young. And it certainly worked. Young looked uncomfortable. He just couldn't get that kind of space that he needs in order to flourish or to make any kind of play whatsoever. And Derrick accepted the challenge. He lived up to it. And he did a fantastic job of trying to limit Trae Young overall. And it's good because Trae Young needed to shut the hell up after what he said in the last minute. I know it's just the excitement of the moment. But I'm glad he got showed up a little bit, to be honest with you, because, it was a little unnecessary considering that they're 6-18 overall in the season. They've struggled as much as they have. They don't have much to talk about, but they did have a good game, and maybe he was feeling himself a little bit despite the fact that he was struggling against Derrick Jones Jr. But enough about the Hawks. This was more about some individual performances on the Miami Heat side. And unfortunately, not a good one for Tyler Hero. After his fourth quarter and overtime heroics against the Chicago Bulls on Sunday, Tyler struggled a little bit shooting from the field. No, not a little bit. He struggled completely. He was 0-for-6 from the field. Just did not seem to have that kind of rhythm or range. And these are just the ups and downs of being a rookie. I honestly, shooters are going to get into funks every once in a while. For some, it's several games. For some, it's several weeks. Hopefully, in Tyler's case, it's something he can shake off in the next matchup because it's a particularly good one, and we need that kind of shooting. The Heat needs that kind of shooting in order to flourish. But Tyler's 0 for 6 performance, you know, got to give Spoelstra credit. He went and put him out there anyway to see if maybe he could kind of get past that funk a little, but he did play 23 minutes. Not impactful minutes at all. In fact, maybe during that stretch, I believe that's when Atlanta really was able to build up their lead considerably, and his plus-minus was a team-worst minus 30. Kelly Olynyk was a minus 20, so not much better, but a minus 30 for Tyler. Again, coming off of a great night the way he had on Sunday when he was able to lead the team in overtime and things of that sort. And, you know, I think you look at Tyler Hero and you have to wonder which version of Tyler is the real one. And I think it's both. He's going to have big nights. He's also going to struggle at times. And that's an opportunity for him to kind of develop some consistency, to learn at this opportunity, to learn as he's growing as a rookie. And you have to keep that in mind. As a rookie, he's still trying to figure out the ins and outs, the kind of what it's necessary in order to be consistently good. And even all-time, you know, all-star veterans struggle on occasion. So not much to read into it, just worth pointing out there. Kelly Olynyk also struggled a little bit from the field. He was 0 for 5. Again, like I said, a minus 20. 4 rebounds, 1 assist. Not particularly impactful in 17 minutes. So he got the quick hook there. But, you know, this is one of those inconsistent nights for Kelly, unfortunately, for him. Some other notable things from tonight's game: no Deion Waiters or James Johnson. James was listed as having an illness of some kind. Deion was listed as inactive prior to the game, along with Goran Dragic and Justice Winslow. So no Justice, no Goran again, and of course no Deion and James, as I said before. And, you know, Goran, I think he's proven himself pretty well over the course of the season. He's had some bad games, but these kinds of games really show how Miami's backup units in particular kind of struggle to look dynamic, to engage in any kind of full fluid offense. It's tough to see them kind of generate points. They don't have any kind of established score there. And I know Spoelstra is trying to do what he can to stagger minutes. And on a night when Tyler Hero isn't shooting well, it looks particularly bogged down there. But this is an opportunity for Goran, you know, to get better, to stay healthy for the rest of the season, because it's clear that Miami needs him if they have any kind of hope of having a deep playoff run. And Justice, you know, continuing to have some back issues there. He didn't look right, according to Eric Spoelstra, before the game, but no clear timetable as far as when he'll return. I would venture a guess that both of them will be back in the lineup on Friday versus the Los Angeles Lakers. I just think there's too much at stake there. That's just too big a game, and everybody wants to participate in that. And Justice is going to be necessary there because they've got such great depth, and the Lakers play such incredible defense. So it's going to be an incredible opportunity for Goran to be able to get some of those points and to help carry the reserve units a little bit in his return. And he's going to probably show some rust, so maybe, you know, he'll get the quick hook, but he's still going to need to get out there, get a taste for it. And I think he's a competent enough scorer to do what he does best and not show too much rust. I mean, there'll probably be some rust, to be honest with you. He's going to miss a few games, but it's a groin issue. It's not like a hand or a shoulder or anything like that. It's not going to affect his shooting motion for the most part. You know, obviously, even with a groin injury, you're going to need some kind of leg strength to propel yourself and things of that sort. But you know, he should be able to bounce back pretty well. The Deion and James situation is worth pointing out because, you know, if James is truly sick, that's one thing. But Deion continuing to be listed as inactive. KZ Okpala played a minute tonight. KZ Okpala, a guy who's probably going to be spending the rest of the season in Sioux Falls once he gets healthy. And I understand that from the Miami front office perspective and the coaching staff's perspective, they want to be able to give him as much experience with the big club as possible. But for Okpala to get burned and for Deion just, well, I didn't even see him at the bench, to be honest with you. That's not to say he wasn't there, but I didn't notice him. And that's just how far he's fallen. And you know, even once he's welcomed back from his suspension, and he's apologized publicly and apologized to his teammates and things of that sort. It's just weird. Like, I'm not sure what's going on with that situation. I'm not sure if there's a way out of it. I'm not sure if James plays again. Like, James Johnson could be a valuable asset against LeBron James and Giannis Antetokounmpo and others. And so far, he just hasn't gotten that kind of opportunity. So I'm not sure if there's a plan there. I know a lot of people suspect that he's going to be traded or something along those lines. There's no way of knowing that for certain. But either way, it's just, it's been an odd season for both of them, and there's no clarification in sight there. It just does not seem like there's going to be an end or resolution to whatever situation this is, because it's a particularly odd one. One other thing about tonight's game, Miami did finish with 35 assists on the night on 53 made field goals, so another one of those big nights where they were dishing the ball around, moving it around pretty frequently, despite the great individual performances. A lot of those were precipitated on some great playmaking as well, and obviously with two players notching triple-doubles, 35 total assists for the team, you're going to get a lot of playmaking there. Miami currently ranks 7th from NBA.com as far as their assist percentage is concerned, so that number probably should climb after tonight's game, but either way, Miami's still among the top 10 teams, even though they were, I think, leading in that category for most of the early part of the season. They've kind of shifted around a little bit, and they've struggled at times, but again, tonight isn't about positivity, not negativity. Even though in the next segment, I'll get into the player of the game, the stat of the game, and of course, the scapegoat of the game. You're listening to Locked On Heat. Remember to listen to and subscribe to new and archived episodes of Locked On Heat on Himalaya, as well as on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. If you're in iTunes, please leave a rating and review, especially if it's a good one. So, the stat of the game, 0. And that's the number of fast break points the Atlanta Hawks were able to notch tonight against the Heat. Not particularly good. You think of a young team like Atlanta, one that can push the pace a little bit, even though Trae Young does seem to excel in half-court offense because of his long-range shooting and playmaking ability. Either way, with the kind of young players that they have, with guys like Reddish and Jabari Parker, well, Jabari's a little slow, but DeAndre Hunter, things of that sort, you'd think that they'd be able to push the pace a little bit, that they'd be able to get some easy transition buckets there. Not the case, and 0 buckets for Atlanta tonight, so certainly that proves it. I guess you'd have to give some credit to Miami on that. They probably get back down on defense quickly enough so that they can harass Hawks shooters, keep them from scoring easily at the rim, things of that sort. So good job by Miami overall. You know, as far as the go-to the game is concerned, the best player of the game for Miami, or for either team, look, you have to give DeAndre Hunter some credit there. He looked pretty incensed against Miami for some reason. No South Beach flu for that young man. He had 28 points, a career high, as I mentioned before, 11 of 17 shooting from the field, 5 of 10 from three-point range. I mean, just amazing stuff. So, only 1 of 4 from the free-throw line, so he shot better from three-point range than he did from the free-throw line. That's a pretty remarkable stat there. Either way, he probably still has the stat line of the game, but I don't feel like giving it to him today, to be honest with you. So I'm going to go with, that's a tough one. Now that I think about it, you know, there's so many ways to break this down. You've got 36 points by Kendrick, the top scorer of the game. You've got Duncan shooting a career high 10 three-pointers, tying a Heat franchise record for most three-pointers made in a game. Then you've got Jimmy Butler with 18 and 10, and Bam with his first career triple-double. My feeling is that I should give it to Bam just because a big triple-double, although somewhat arbitrary, is also a nice accomplishment and certainly highlights his incredible versatility. But I'm going to scratch all that. I'm not going to give it to anybody. There is no great player of the game. There is no GOAT of the game. They're all fantastic players of the game. Everybody wins an award. You get an award. You get an award. Everybody gets an award today. And that's okay. I don't even want to get into the scapegoat of the game because, again, trying to stay positive, you know. I'm here in South Florida. It's finally over. The move from hell is finally done and over with, and I get to focus on uncovering this team and giving you all the best quality coverage that you can hope for, and more player interviews, more practices, more sound bites, more in-depth detail from the team itself, you know, all the kinds of things that you all love to listen to, and hopefully I'll be able to provide them. And I've got a couple of great guests, national media members with some broad perspective there. That's another thing I want to point out, actually, now that I'm talking about this. And it's great to have some people that you know in the industry that are willing to come and provide a national perspective on this team. But ever since that Toronto Raptors win, I got to tell you, it seems like Miami is the buzz team now. It's like the things that we were seeing during the first, 19 games before that? I'm not sure exactly what game that was as far as the overall season is concerned, but there were 19 games or so, let's say, before that Toronto Raptors win where they were playing pretty damn good. And I think everybody was like, oh, they're surprisingly good, but they didn't have any idea what they were talking about. If I saw a tweet earlier today, I can't recall exactly from whom, but they were pointing out that Kenny Smith of TNT was talking about Kendrick Nunn being a better player than Bam Adebayo. And look, Kendrick's scoring is fantastic, but there's no way that his overall impact approaches what Bam can do. And it just goes to show that sometimes the national perspective is a little skewed. They cannot watch all these games. They cannot watch 82 games times 30, 2,400. That's a lot of basketball to watch, and there's no way they're going to be able to pull that off. And so they have to pick and choose individual nights where they can watch a game, and even those, they're going to watch condensed versions. They're going to look through stats. They're going to have somebody talk to them about, you know, things of that sort. In my own piece on Bam Adebayo, I talked to Alvin Gentry. If you haven't read it, please feel free to do so. I talked to Alvin Gentry, and one of the things that he kept talking about was, man, Kendrick Nunn is so good. Kendrick Nunn is great. And I'm like, well, I asked him a question about Bam Adebayo, and he's talking to me about Kendrick Nunn. It's just unbelievable. That's the kind of story that I guess has some kind of cross-sectional appeal around the NBA about, you know, him being undrafted and being a diamond in the rough, so to speak, although obviously there's a lot going on with that situation. But that's the national perspective is not always the most accurate one. Even still, it's good to kind of balance out the insular bubble that Heat fans and Heat media tend to find themselves in, because you get to see the team all the time. Maybe you don't see anything from the outside perspective, and I think it's important to kind of balance that out. Plus, a couple of writers that know a lot of what they're talking about and have written some pretty fantastic pieces, or at least one of them that's going to be coming out soon about the Heat. So stay tuned for that, and we'll have those in the next couple of weeks, maybe next week or so, depending on how schedules play out. But that's all for tonight. I'm trying to recap, you know, put together another episode somewhere down the line. But thank you so much for tuning in. You can always connect with me on Twitter using the hashtag AskLOHeat or email me at LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. I'm David Ramil signing off and thanking you as always for your support.
Yeah! Wrap it up, B.